I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And everything's coming up, Simpsons.
This episode is brought to you by Strongdar Nastor of Akon, the wedding episode. You laughed at me as if you've never heard those words strung together before in your life, because maybe I mispronounced them. We're also brought to you by Action Figure Man, the How to Buy Action Figure Man episode.
Mm-hmm.
We are brought to you also by Ren and Snippy's season premiere.
Clip not available yet.
Yep. And we're also brought to you by, how about this, Cooking with Krusty. Yes, our favorite segment. Of all
Ixnay
of them.
On the OOJ.
Ooh, I failed Latin, so I'm not good at this. We are, of course, talking about the episode The Front. This is the 19th episode of The Simpsons' fourth season. It originally aired on April 15th, 1993. It was written by Adam Lapidus, directed by Rich Moore, and the showrunners at the time were Al Jean and Mike Reiss.
Hell yeah.
Hey.
I don't think I know very much about Adam Lapidus. Lapidus. What a horrible name. I feel so bad for him. He would have been made fun of all the time as a kid. That's all I'm saying. He clearly went on to do great things.
It could have been Asweepe Lapidus. Do you remember that one sketch from SNL?
I do. Yeah. This episode is misleadingly titled, in my opinion. I think it's got a really bad name. It makes me think it's going to be about, like, a battle. Like, it sounds like it's going to be about something really, or a heist.
Litigious courtroom case, which we all know is like, you know, what cartoon writers are constantly going for and audiences are just ravenous over.
Oh, well, as someone who's obsessed with jury duty, I would say that does sound exciting. This is an episode, season four is excellent, but it still is early enough that it's not necessarily going to be one of the episodes that I think of as a classic.
Mm.
And so it's been a minute since I've seen this, and I was like, what? Which one is The Front? And it's so funny, and it is so good.
Yeah, I mean, it belongs to, I think they have like a pretty, you know, small collection, but a collection nonetheless of like meta commentary on how much it sucks to write TV episodes. There are multiple episodes that are like this. And you know what? Since we're transitioning into our broader talk, I'm just going to intro our guest. I'm so excited to have him on the show today. You know him as one of the writers and creators of Corporate, which can be seen Tuesday nights on Comedy Central. And I'm pretty sure you're going to fill me in on what time.
10:30.
I, you know what? Improv,
who was that?
Baby. Improv. Oh, who was that? I'm Matt Ingebretson.
It's me.
Woo. You're also very talented stand-up. I forgot to mention
Get
that.
Get out of here, guys.
Stop. You have a weekly show called Good Heroine in LA at Stories Books. Okay. All right. We're done.
Stop. Okay. Forget about it.
Okay. Get out.
I think we're going to get rained out this Saturday, though.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting for this podcast.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel, I mean, as we've all produced.
It'll stand the test of time.
It'll rain every Saturday after you listen to this. We've all produced comedy shows or some form of live performance in LA.
Yeah.
Does it feel to you like a sweet release when you get rained out because the pressure's off?
Yes, I feel a little bit of guilt for the people who like probably drove across town to get there.
Well, because you've one of those popular shows, of which there
I
are
know.
Three in all of the
I
city.
I feel guilty about that, too, because I've run mostly wildly unpopular shows where every show is stressing about people coming, but this one people come. It's fun.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, you're also like, what, in your fourth year or some shit?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, you're also like, what, in your 40s?
In your 40s? Like,
in your mid to late
40s? You got to work your way. You know what
so
they
what
say?
If he is?
You got to do comedy for 35 years and then you get, you started when you were five.
I think people think I'm in my mid, people, Tom Green, I've been getting Tom Green constantly.
Interesting.
I think people think I'm in my mid 40s and Tom Green. But
well, that's flattering for Tom Green.
I think so.
Guys, stop it. I'm blushing.
Have you found, because I feel like we've all kind of grown up with like our celebrity doppelganger and everybody and their mom tells us, hey, you look like this. Has it shifted since you've either grown or become more in the public eye?
I used to get...
Since you've grown.
Since you're no longer a boy.
I'm a big boy now.
Oh!
Yes, you are.
I used to get Edward Norton. which I was felt more flattered by. No offense to Tom Green, by the way, who I know is listening. And Tom, but, I just want to tell you, you're a good-looking guy, too.
He's a good-looking guy.
He's no Norty, baby.
No.
He's a celebrated actor, that Norty.
Mm-hmm.
You guys talking about my Norty?
You Norton?
Who have you got? Oh, we were talking. Allie and I were just talking about celebrity doppelgangers. Allie used to get Sarah Palin.
Yes, I used to get Sarah Palin all the time.
That is such a lazy comparison.
What I was explaining earlier is that there was a time where there were only two brunettes with glasses, and that those people, one did an impression of the other. So it was kind of like, that is who you are.
Right, right.
Of course, now, and for quite some time, I've been getting Lisa Loeb all the time because I also play guitar, and I tell people that I'm Lisa Loeb.
Smart.
But that works. Thanks. Yeah, that's really...
Have you tried my new eyewear line at Costco?
What?
Who do you get, Julia?
I used to get Winona Ryder all the time when I was younger.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I remember there being a particularly saucy moment when I was 14 years old and so scared to talk to anybody. And I was at this like medieval times ripoff that was Western themed.
Oh.
There's a lot of walking to this anecdote that you got to do with me.
Uh-huh.
And I was at the gift shop afterward and like, you know, strayed from my family group and like some teenager behind the counter went, "Hey, ma'am, has anyone ever told you that you look like Winona Ryder?" And from that point forward, I was like, I can do high school. I can do this now. He didn't know. It was such an offhand compliment that I'm sure his manager forced him to be pleasant and say.
He tells
that
to everyone.
But it got me through.
Yeah, maybe he did.
He told that to me, too. Isn't that weird?
But you know what? I see it. I see it. When she was going through her pixie cut phase, we could both go pixie to pixie on that one.
Mm. Oh.
You're not, listeners can't see, but he just flipped his bangs.
Whoops.
They can tell. So let's talk about why this episode. Now, of course, our listeners know that we are asking people to choose their favorite episode of The Simpsons with the large caveat of if it hasn't been picked yet.
Yes.
So, with that said.
Well, okay, I have a reveal, or I don't know if it's a reveal. I haven't listened to all of the episodes of this podcast, so
what
maybe.
What do you mean?
I mean, I have listened to them, and I loved everyone equally.
Thanks.
I've probably only seen 40 episodes of The Simpsons in my entire life.
But the good 40.
But all the best ones.
You be 40.
Because my mom did not allow me to watch The Simpsons growing up. Have you had anybody on who's had that?
Oh, yes, a fair few.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not unique at all.
I would say no.
Damn it.
You know,
but I'm so glad we got to this topic. I truly thought it would be an hour in.
When did you watch for the first time, and did you ever sneak it?
I did sneak it sometimes, but I started watching. I bought seasons 3 and 4 on DVD in college at some point, and those I still own those to this day. That's what I watched. I watched this episode on a few days ago. But so I picked this almost at random from the list because these are the 3 and 4 the seasons I know, and I don't know many others. But
so your fandom has probably been fairly casual. But of those two seasons, like, what was the impact that it had on you, and what even encouraged you to watch it in the first place if you kind of didn't grow up with it?
Well, I felt like, and I guess like I anticipate watching probably all of The Simpsons at some point because I'm wildly, obviously impressed by the show. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just like don't feel the same in the way that like when I rewatch Seinfeld, other than there are certain people on there who have done crazy things since then and it's now strange.
Yes.
It's now like, oh, I have a different opinion of that guy. No.
But, which guy?
Yeah.
Who are we talking about?
In the same way where when I watch that now, I feel like I'm on a comfy couch, which I usually am as well, but mentally
right.
I'm like, I'm home. I understand this. This brings me back in a nice way. The Simpsons I don't feel that way about. So I don't
just really on edge and
yeah, I'm on edge and scared. What are they gonna say?
On the spiky yoga ball.
Settee.
But what I like about The Simpsons
spiky
is it's
yeah, the kind that, you know, you roll out your back onto.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
duh.
Right. I know about those.
Yeah? You fuck with yoga balls?
Yeah, I fuck with yoga balls.
Cool.
But yeah, I just think it's really funny and joke dense and smart. I have unfortunately probably nothing new to say about The Simpsons, but I wanted to sneak onto this podcast to talk to you guys anyway.
Okay. I don't know that we have anything new to say about The Simpsons.
That's why we are shifting dramatically right now. Sharp right turn. What do you want to spend this podcast hour talking about?
Well, I really do like this episode. And I particularly like the story about the meta commentary about writing in Hollywood.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. The storyline about Homer not having graduated high school and having to go to night school feels like such a throwaway story in a way where they blow through it in this kind of, it feels like such a B story where they like chop it up and like almost feels like I would have been nervous if I were writing The Simpsons to like blow a potentially really juicy story in one episode in the way that they do. Did you guys feel that at all or no?
Well, my suspicion, without having gone to like a deep dive of research, which, you know, some other podcast hosts would, but I'm too much of a cool dude to do it.
Yeah.
You were talking earlier, I use that sunglass emoji all the time, right? But my suspicion when I saw this, I guessed maybe Homer not having finished high school was intended to be a bigger episode, but I think that much like the main story in this episode, they realized that they didn't have all the beats there and it wasn't really that much meat on the bone because this episode also ends short, which is why we have that, you know, funny little Ned Flanders bit.
Interesting. I was curious about that because it ended and then that came on. I was like, what?
Infamously perplexing to every Simpsons viewer from the time it aired to now.
Yes.
I love it.
I love it, too. Well, I like it because I like it when, you know, the things I love, like TV shows and movies, take big swings. And I think that it was kind of like a funny big swing. It doesn't need to make sense.
It's really funny because it's so stupid. The joke in it is that, what is it, that Ned thinks it's time for church, but that it's actually
Saturday.
Which is
Oakley Doakley.
But you accept it.
Yeah.
I was, you know, because I write music comedy and love to come up with things for, you know, short little jingly type things are harder than a long thing because obviously you have less time to pack a punch.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that they're trying to come up with a jingle for Ned Flanders and they rhyme it with Ganders and to get there they say, hens love roosters. That's so funny to me because it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
Why is this song about birds? It's really well done. It really was tickling me.
Yeah, I mean, I always like try to imagine like what that moment in the writer's room was.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you get both in The Simpsons writer's room, which makes it such a great show, where you get like the very smart Harvard jokes that are like such a fucking swish, like nothing but net, like we did it, guys. And then you get this moment, which is such a great moment in a writer's room when you pitch something that is so undeniably stupid.
Yes.
Like something that really makes everybody look into themselves and really contemplate all their life choices that got them to that moment.
And like, also,
this
like,
is
what
the
am
dumbest
I doing
thing.
Here?
Yeah. Yeah. But you can't help. Everybody, I feel like, probably in the room just doubled over and was like, we cannot do this.
Yes.
But we're short. We don't know what to do.
Uh-huh.
It's a song. But what's the point? There's no point.
It's also the type of joke where it's like, especially if you're trying to write like smart comedy, you're like, okay, everything's got to have a point and mean something.
Right.
And do all these things at once. But then when you like, it's hard to do that. And sometimes when you come up with something stupidly funny, you're like, this, I think, is what I actually want to do. Or like what tickled me as a kid about like being funny was just utter stupidity. So that's like, it's nice to have that stuff.
I used to think that like assembling a script and like trying to form a story and B story was sort of like building a puzzle in real time.
Yeah.
But as I've gotten deeper into what basically you just described of like everything needs to have a meeting and this and that, it kind of feels like building a Rubik's Cube one square at a time.
It kind of is.
And it could go any which way and it's still a Rubik's Cube, but is it the right Rubik's Cube?
Yeah, exactly.
This is my inner monologue.
Well, and actually this episode, the itchy and scratchy like writing storyline of it is like interesting because it's about the like itchy and scratchy episode they watch that they hate is like didactic and it just is like not funny and I now can't remember what the but I think it's like don't smoke or something.
Oh yeah, kids don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was basically just the mouse kept hitting the cat on the head and saying, ow, and then laughing, and then ow, and then laughing.
Yeah.
And Bart even has faith because he loves this show of saying, he's like, don't worry, they're building up to something.
I
and then the look
line.
In the camera, don't mm-hmm. do drugs, kids. She's like, Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh. Don't worry, they're building to something. I feel I've said so many times and been wrong.
Oh, yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like, truly sad, especially it happens with music, too. You'll
I'm
be like,
so pissed right now.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Say
I'm
no more.
I'm just angry. No, one of my favorite shows is really shit in the bed in this last season. I'm not going to say what, but I'm just mad.
Tell me off air.
It's MILF. No, I'm just kidding. I was talking earlier off podcast. I'm a SMILF lover now, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I love SMILF.
I think that's nice.
I've seen one episode.
I think that's plenty.
Yeah.
I think that's more than most.
I think that's plenty.
So I wanted to say something about Adam Lapidus, because that is a name that I had not heard before, and it's because this is the only episode that he has written for The Simpsons.
Hmm.
But I wanted to read his Wikipedia because it's funny. His name on Wikipedia is Adam I. Lapidus, and the reason it says that is when using his, he uses his full name because he's trying to imitate James L. Brooks, another Simpsons writer whom Lapidus admired, which I just think is such a funny way to refer to James L. Brooks. Yeah, so he's another Simpsons writer.
That's all he is.
But to let you know who this guy is and how he came to be someone who we're talking about today, he wrote on Full House and Smart Guy, Bunked, The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, and more kind of like kids stuff like that. So it makes sense that the episode that he chose is something that is so centric on Bart and Lisa.
I didn't realize that. And also, well, I just feel like he's probably just a freelancer that they had for the season because they have like a certain number of freelance scripts that they have to fling out.
Oh, interesting.
So before we get too deep into the episode, I was wondering if maybe you could read the Wikipedia entry for this ice cold.
Why the hell not? This is what we do every time. You know, you've listened
I've
to
listened
every
episode that
every
I like
episode.
Equally.
It was actually your idea to do that.
Yeah, I came up with this.
Thank you. We haven't been crediting you. But
well, you're welcome.
I know you don't do it for the credit.
No.
Which is why you've donated all of your Comedy Central money to...
Pizza.
Great. You're so magnanimous. Okay, in the episode, Bart and Lisa decide to write an episode of the Itchy and Scratchy Show. After their script is rejected, they resubmit it under the name of their grandfather, Abraham Simpson, resulting in Grandpa... Oh, now he's Grandpa? Resulting in Grandpa being hired as a staff writer. Meanwhile, Homer returns to high school to retake a failed science course.
Let me ask you this. I thought that was an interesting or plot point that I was curious about of Bart and Lisa think that their script didn't get considered seriously because they have kid names.
Yeah,
because that they put that on it, right?
They wrote a letter and said, my brother and I love your show, so I think that tipped him off, even though George Meyer Jr. wasn't really paying that much attention to
right
it.
But that makes sense. Okay,
I wanted to ask you before we dive into the episode, you're a writer,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes.
And this episode features a story where Grandpa gets hired when he is not qualified or really out of his depth. Did you ever experience that before corporate, getting hired on something that you were like, either you maybe overplayed who you were
on
the interview?
Well, that is corporate. Corporate
perfect
is the
transition
example of that.
Then.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like wrote on some pilots and stuff before corporate, and all of them, I think most people feel this way in this industry where you're like, I'm definitely, I'm tricking everyone. I'm a fraud.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll see if I can, like, play it out when I get into the room.
Yeah.
Because, like, and I talk to even, like, more experienced writers who get into a new room and they're like, everyone here doesn't like me and doesn't think I'm funny. Everyone feels that way all the time.
Yeah, you have to kind of, I wouldn't say that it, I mean, it depends on the room that it can be very aggressive. Sometimes you kind of feel the heat a little bit more overtly, but I do feel like everybody's sizing each other up and going like, am I the bad roommate?
Of course.
Which is a question the bad roommate asks.
We even like at the beginning of our writers' rooms are like, listen, everyone's here. Nobody's a fraud. We can be stupid. Like, we try to really help people.
That's good.
Because it's scary. And you're like, you spend so much time in a very small room with these same people. And so you like, the goal should be to create comfortable or like make it comfortable. At
so
least.
Of your team, who is the biggest fraud?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it awkward when you fire the fraud? Fire fraud.
Yeah.
Fire fraud. One thing to be said of imposter syndrome that I think could be a nice positive takeaway is that, you know, you're there in the first place. You took a step that put you in a situation where you even get to feel like you don't belong there because you pushed yourself hard enough to be somewhere cool. So that's nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice little thing that helps. It doesn't dissolve it. But since not every job will have Matt and Jake telling you that you're not a fraud, it's nice to find the little things where you can.
And also, even if you feel like a fraud and then you sweat it out in a room and then you get fired and you think that that is confirmation that you're a fraud, it ain't, baby.
No, it's fine.
It ain't. Anyone that tells you that you're no good is just overcompensating for their own insecurities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel.
Especially in this industry, it's like everyone's full of shit. Only like 10 people know what they're doing in this industry.
Yeah. Thank God they're running all of the shows that are good. Right? We all love those. 20, 10 people.
So this show obviously covers, this episode covers a lot of different moving parts. As we mentioned, we have the A story of the kids writing a TV show, which is also very fun. And they make a great point of that right away with Bart asking, like, cartoons have writers? And Lisa saying, not really. but that is something that we've talked about on the show before, where if you did watch the show as a kid, and I'm sure this is true of other types of shows you watch as a kid, and maybe even well into some level of adulthood, not everyone thinks about that a show was written.
Like, right.
It's just something that appears.
I mean, yeah, if you don't work in this industry, it's a total mystery how all this... I've explained to my dad how a TV show gets made, and he's baffled that that much work goes into it.
Because
when you are not aware of it, you're watching at home, you're like, well, these people showed up, and then it appeared in front of my face, and that's the end of the story.
Right.
It's like,
and even when you're in the industry, I feel like when I was like first starting out and was just like interning and still like trying to wrap my head around like what does a writer's room look like, every show is so different.
Yeah.
So you could present to me a photo and be like, this is a Modern Family writer's room, and it's like 27 people.
Yes.
And then you
this one has a cornucopia in the middle.
And then you present another writer's room photo, and it's like, this is Blackish, and it's three people.
Or
something. It's like, and it's both a show that it fills up the same amount of time, but it's like, it's so baffling. I mean, The Simpsons has two rooms.
Yeah,
so
I've heard about that.
People can kind of separate. And so does like shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine at different shows.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the more pressure, the more money, the more writers probably.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they have more money. And it's also like just specifically joke dense shows where it's like they separate and just come up with 20 jokes for the same line and then pick, you know, it's that type of thing.
I think I heard something about like, and maybe this is just Megan Amram, because I was going to say like The Good Place would often have like you go off and come up with names of storefronts. And I think it was actually just Megan Amram. She was just alone in a room.
She's just the best at that. Yeah.
She's so good at it.
Scary. Let's all take a moment to think about Megan Amram alone in a room during our break.
Greetings. I am Plek Dexsetter, contacting you from the Zix Squadron, which is frankly sort of crappy, but I'm here on a heroic mission with my trusty crew, C-53.
Heroic feels like an exaggeration.
Okay, sure. And Security Officer Dar.
Plek, don't put me in your stupid recording.
Well, and we're all traveling aboard our trusty starship, the Bargerian Jade. Bargy.
What? Sorry. I'm awake.
It's fine.
I was just flying while asleep.
Hey there, this is Alden Ford. I play Plek, and we are so excited to announce that our podcast, Mission to Zix, is now part of the Maximum Fun Network. Our third season launches on Max Fun on March 20th. Binge seasons 1 and 2 right now. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Hey, we're back. What a good break.
Yay.
Man, in my version, she wrote so many good puns.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
And also a movie with J.J. Abrams.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that really true?
That's really true.
Oh, my God. What a woman.
I know. I'm very impressed. She rules.
Yeah. Wow. Well, listeners.
But this okay, so this episode, I'm going to host this podcast for
please
a minute.
Do. Okay.
Back to the episode.
Uh-huh.
No, but it is like, it is interesting that like, it isn't, I would say, the heaviest hitting like, all the jokes aren't the heaviest hitting of the Simpsons episodes I've seen, but it is, like, really funny. It is, like, them punching themselves in the face in a nice way, where, like, right. I wasn't aware, because they take shots at Harvard writers yes. in it, and I wasn't aware that even back then there was a stigma, or they were aware that that was, like, Harvard writers were douchey, because my impression of the Simpsons is, like, that's what it was for those handful of first years, and even continue as, like, a Harvard club. Right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. You. There are very few people. Mike Scully is one of the few people at the beginning who was not a Harvard dude.
Right.
And so the self-deprecation is very cute and funny. And even having caricatures of the writers at that time
right.
as the Simpsons writers mm-hmm. is just such a nice way of doing it. But yeah, it did
yeah.
seem, you
and
know,
I'm
it
sure
kind of invented that, I assume.
Like National Lampoon type stuff. Like there was a lot of like Harvard stuff that was
That's
sort of
true.
Permeating
right.
through what was becoming in real time forming alt comedy and mm-hmm. you know that kind of stuff. So and I think that like when you know you are a young whippersnapper aspiring writer for TV and you hear that like most of the rooms are filled with Harvard people.
Oh, it's so disheartening.
Yeah like they get that too
yeah.
So I'm sure they were probably aware of that stigma and
uh-huh.
I mean personally I appreciate this more as an adult because I couldn't understand it as a child, but
right.
I really appreciate them making fun of Harvard and you know, in this episode, "You sir have the boorish manners of a Yalie" is a really funny
yeah.
line. And
uh-huh.
I also really love in the other episode when Sideshow Bob's brother comes and
jokes.
It's so great, just like, you know, mentioned something about Clown College and he says, "I'll have you not talk about Princeton in that way."
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, I love it when they make fun of that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, this episode is, you know, really dialing up what they do best as far as meta commentary, because you get it sprinkled
mm-hmm.
throughout the whole show, especially during this run of like making fun of Fox and making fun of, you know, like their old dog and pony show. Like they don't have very high self-esteem, or
right.
at least not overtly, you know, for their show and what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
which I think it makes it really charming. But I think that this is sort of forming the apex of like, you know, we're just writing a TV show. We're not playing God here and
yeah.
sort of making fun of that process.
Well, yeah, I think that's what it's about too. Like I think that the first joke or one of the first jokes in the episode is Homer putting a plunger on his head for
yes. Marge, it happened again
for no
just like,
for no reason yeah.
yeah
and when I was watching I was like okay sure or like it's kind of funny in like a superficial way but then like that almost becomes the point of the episode like he does it at the end and also the episode is about like stupidity and comedy is kind of what's beautiful about comedy
right
yeah.
but that moment is also a really great punchline because
uh-huh.
they kind of tee it up they're watching one of our sponsors Cooking with Krusty and Krusty is there with like a
oh,
Jewish
yeah,
rabbi
right. Being ashamed of your dad.
Yeah. So I think Lisa says, "So sad that Krusty's ashamed of his heritage." And then
yes.
Homer walks in.
Which is also like a interesting or that's just like a deep like thought from The Simpsons is like to
from
be
an 8-year-old girl.
From an 8-year-old girl to be ashamed of your father
yeah.
is like
yeah.
so dark and like it's. yeah,
and they stretch it out to your heritage, which feels like, you know, more revered in this context.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in some ways it is too, because we're in within the world of the show, like. The heritage of The Simpsons is The Simpsons family. So it just immediately feels like, you know, like it has a weird feeling to kind of spark the tone for the rest of this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have that moment of, what are you going to change your name to when you grow up? And I love the names that they picked. It was Lois Sanborn and Steve Bennett.
Steve Bennett. I have research on that. A Reddit thread.
Ooh.
It's the only research I did for this podcast.
The nicest
impressed.
Place on earth.
The nicest place on earth. Some friendly fan said, Lisa's Lois Sanborn is probably a reference to jazz saxophonist David Sanborn.
Nerd.
I don't know about probably. And
no.
then, but I loved the next line in this explanation on Reddit. Then Bart picked, quote, probably a macho sounding kid name. So Lisa gets the full explanation, but Bart's just random?
Yeah.
Did you guys have names that you wanted to be as a kid?
When I was really young and stupid, like when I was 10, I thought the name Jason was cool. Which
Jason
reveals,
is cool.
Yeah, I was like, Jason that's a
cool
it's kid's
casual.
Name.
Yeah. I remember my mom telling me, and I don't know why she told me this, but she was like, if you were born a boy, you would have been Spencer. And I was like, okay.
That sounded like it was going to be much more mystical.
Yeah.
Spencer.
And then
Travis.
I remember one day at like YMCA after school daycare, this like counselor I'd never met before came up to me and was like, hey, like, I'll say, I'm Jason, mm-hmm. the coolest name. What's your name? And in that half a second, I had the thought, you could be anyone now. He doesn't know your life previous to this. So I said, I'm Jane. And then I had to commit to Jane for the rest of, it wasn't even that far from my real name.
Jame, J-A-M as in?
No, Matt. Jane, J-A-N-E. Perhaps I was influenced by Daria. We shall never know. But I do believe I came, I said it straight to him at the end. I said, no, my name is Julia. And I'm pretty sure he was like,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
Didn't you say it was Julia?
He's a Jason. Jasons don't care about anything. Jason's
this is a little care. Unrelated, but it reminds me of times when you like casually lie for no reason. Where,
it's
like,
so embarrassing. It's and it's so, just like, why am I doing this?
I know. Like it happens to me most when someone's like, have you seen this movie?
It's always a yes question. And you're just saying, yeah, yeah, totally.
And I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, no, I haven't. So, and then I'm like, fuck, now I'm going to get caught in this lie that I didn't even care about. There's no reason for me to do it to begin with.
It's truly a problem with our like genetic makeup, I think. I think there's something actually just like that where our lizard brains just like, just say yes.
Yeah, like, because it keeps the conversation going. Yeah. It's like, you
know. Agreement feels nice.
Yeah. It does. Yeah, people, I used to dye my hair red and people on like the bus would be like, is your hair really red? And it's like, yes. And then they'd be like, was it more red as a child? And I'm like, yes. Like, I'm just like, please don't ask for pictures.
Who are these people on the bus?
Oh, don't worry about it. Hashtag bus life.
On the topic of films, and then we can jump back in, but like, I feel, especially, so I've seen a film. Don't need to lie about that. But then,
I've seen a film.
Phew, got out of that one. Didn't see that one coming. But then when people want to talk to me about the film, maybe I'll say like, I really thought that it was this and this and that. And then they'll disagree with me and I'll immediately be like, or whatever you said.
I know. You know? It is weirdly, it can be stressful to disagree about stuff like that, especially with someone you like. I've had to learn, because I think I grew up in a household where it's like, let's all be nice to each other and we'll never disagree on anything. And as I've gotten older, I've had to embrace confrontation a little more, even in conversations about movies where we have different opinions.
Yeah, I think especially if we're going kind of back to the topic of the episode, like in a creative environment, I feel, and I don't know if you guys have experienced this too, but I feel like that agreeableness has kind of trickled into maybe in like pitching on things.
Sure.
Not to say that I'm like, you know, just dashing away my own taste or like if something is like so wrong story-wise, I'm not speaking up, but like I've felt myself be more agreeable than I'm comfortable with because I also like want to work.
Yeah.
But I'm learning now and I'm trying to like sharpen that tool of like truly agreeableness in a creative setting is like the worst thing that you can do.
It is. And it's hard to find that balance because part of the fun of creating things is like, that's funny. We'll be funny together right now. But like if you're creating like a longer form TV show, you need to be like kind of question everything and be okay like really thinking hard about what you're doing. And it's it can be uncomfortable, but it's better to do that than like say yes to everything and then you've made something mediocre and then it's like, why did we do that?
And then it's flat and it has no dimension to it. Yeah. But it was really fun in the room.
We had fun for 12 weeks.
So let's start off with our first clip to kind of set the story of what Homer is going through during all of this. We have Marge going through the mail. So let's listen to this here.
Third notice? Final notice? Some guys are coming. What's this? An invitation to our high school reunion. Gee, that's odd. They didn't send one to you.
This is it, Homer. It's time to tell her the terrible secret from your past. Marge, I ate those fancy soaps you bought for the bathroom.
Oh, my God!
No, the other secret.
Marge, I never graduated from high school.
Well, that still doesn't explain why you ate my soap. Wait, maybe it does.
I never passed Remedial Science 1A.
And you're a nuclear technician?
Marge, ixnay on the nuclear nay ignition te.
What did you say?
I don't know. I flunked Latin, too.
I want to say that...
That's a really good run.
It's a really good run. Mm. But that one part with, but that doesn't explain the soaps... Maybe it does. It's so perfect.
Good.
What a perfect joke structure.
I've bragged about this moment of my life before, but when Maximum Fun West was doing, where was that? Big Bear?
Lake Arrowhead.
Lake Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. One and the same.
But, how dare you?
But Jordan Morris and I just set up the laptop underneath the stars and watched a YouTube compilation of Homer's inner monologue, and that was one of the thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so under the beautiful nature sky, while everyone else was enjoying the nature sky, we were
you
just
were staring
this.
At your laptop. That sounds great,
with
though.
With your nature guy.
Really, with my nature guy. And a little nature raccoon came. But
whoa!
Anyway. It was
did he get a nature pie? Sorry.
And yeah, it was that moment, because this episode, like I said, I'm not as familiar with it as I am some of the other episodes I've seen time and time again. My guess is this one wasn't syndicated very often.
Hmm.
But anyway, this one had us laughing so hard that it was like one of those moments when like birds fly out of a tree because they are like disrupted by that laughter being.
Well, there's another inner monologue line, or like a little bit of inner monologue later in the episode, that is my favorite line from the whole episode, which is, I wrote it down.
Thank you.
When Homer is like, all right, brain, you don't like me and I don't like you, but let's just get through this and then I can go back to killing you with beer, which is
so yeah. dark.
Which is so funny when he's like, I don't, because it doesn't even, it's one of those jokes that it doesn't even make sense. It's like, and then the brain goes, okay, or the brain agrees to that deal.
Yeah. Right,
it's like,
right.
You guys seem like you like each other.
Yeah.
I feel like in that run that you watched with Jordan, there was a large percentage that was him talking to his brain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that runner. It's almost like an actual character pairing that we get throughout the course of The Simpsons.
I do always like a good, you don't like me and I don't like you, but the best, in my opinion, of The Simpsons is between between Mo and Lisa. Just Mo saying to Lisa, just like, all right, you don't like me and I don't like you. And she's like, I like you. So to continue on, we've already talked about how the kids are watching TV and this very weak episode comes on, and it's actually impressive that they could even recognize that a television episode could be bad. And I think that that's maybe a nice moment in our lives when, you know, TV is our friend. We love TV. To be able to even distinguish that what you're watching, because it's such a treat to be watching it in the first place.
Right.
If you're a kid. It's kind of like it's kind of a moment.
That is a turn in your life when you start having discerning tastes and you're not just like, movies, it does suck. Yeah, it's not fun. Yeah.
I feel like it all starts, that's why I think, maybe we've talked about this on the podcast before, but when 13 years old is like such a big age for discerning taste.
We talked about that with Jonah Ray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, what's your favorite movie? It probably was when you were 13. And like that, because I think that we crave autonomy so much when we're a kid and we're shuffled around, you know, everywhere in the world. So then if you can finally be like, my favorite band is, and my favorite movie is,
well,
and
I think some of
my
it comes,
time is valuable.
Because when you're 13, I think you start interacting with like probably some older, like potentially high schoolers, and like you get your first taste of being like, I like this. And they're like, that sucks.
What?
Like, what? The thing I like sucks? Do I suck?
Yeah. It's so bizarre because it does make you question everything. And you're just like, but I love ELO.
I'm finding as I get older, because like I would just, maybe you guys are the same. As I got almost too much discerning taste, you can get where you start almost not liking anything, or you start finding you have criticisms about everything, which is good to some extent.
Being a hipster?
Yeah. excuse me?
What?
But I now find myself wanting to love things more.
Yeah,
I will,
me
like,
too.
I'm swinging back a little where I'll like still can recognize whatever flaws in it, but I am more willing to give people a break. So I'm like, I hate hating things now.
Yeah.
Too much.
My review for a lot of movies is, I love sitting down and I like being cold and I like popcorn. I had a blast.
Yeah.
I just have a great time watching things. Like, it truly is great. But I think part of that, I think the getting older part is a part of it, because you do realize that, and not in a bad way, but like, oh yeah, we're all definitely dying. Not too far from now, so let's enjoy it while we're here.
Yeah.
I would say that, though, when it comes to like TV or movies or things like that, if it is made lazily or like you can tell that that person didn't give a shit, I will fucking hate it. I will
that
turn
is,
it off.
That is the thing that I hate, because my feeling after having made TV is like it is really hard, and it's like it can go wrong. It can get kind of bad. So many steps of the process that it's like anything that's good is a miracle.
It is, right.
And so I'm like willing to cut people a little bit of slack or just be okay. It's like it wasn't perfect. That's fine.
And you can see what they were trying to do.
Yeah, that's
totally.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, because it all hinges in the edit. But then, like you said, like it could be like you have a really really great script, and it's like which all scripts for corporate are.
Get out of here.
Yeah, you start with a really great script and it could be chipped away in so many ways that, like, you know, death by a thousand cuts at the end.
That's what happens every time,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like, and then once you're part of, like, the behind the scenes of it and you just realize, like, what just a production day is like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's just so hard.
But that's why, like, in this episode of The Simpsons, bringing it back to the podcast,
which
I am the host of now, is...
How's it feel?
Scary.
Are you going to quit corporate?
I'm afraid. I'm done with corporate, and I'm all in.
We're going to say corporate.
Okay. We switch.
Honestly,
we've agreed.
I wouldn't be the worst host for this podcast because I have seen so few Simpsons. It'd be like fresh eyes.
That's what I tell myself every time I go into an interview where I'm so not suited for it. I'm like, maybe they don't need someone that's seen Star Wars.
You know, it's funny you say that. I won't say the show, but I interviewed to write for a show once that was like sci-fi based, mm-hmm. and I felt like I was killing the interview, and then they were like, so do you watch sci-fi? And I was like, eh.
No!
And right as I said that, I was like, why didn't I lie?
The one time that really would have helped me. So let's actually take another quick break. And during this break, let's think about all the times we've been frauds.
Okay.
Hey, it's Janet Varney of the JV Club podcast, and I am so excited to be joining Maximum Fun. If you're not yet familiar with the JV Club, it's a podcast with me and some of my favorite women, and in the summer, men, as we explore the highs and lows of our terrible teenage years into what I like to call our adult lessons. For example, you can hear about Allison Brie's humiliating moment at a gymnastics competition. You can hear about Jesse Thorne's incredibly salty language in English class. Or you can let Busy Phillips tell you how she met Sharon Stone at an Arizona toy fair, somehow. You can join me and all my once awkward friends every Thursday by subscribing to the JV Club at MaximumFun.org.
Hey, we're back!
Hey!
Oh, I'm a lot more sad after that break.
Yeah!
You know what time when I was a fraud? Hmm. Right now on this podcast, because I haven't seen many of the episodes of Simpsons.
You're fine, though, but you're not a fraud.
You're earnest and truthful.
And you're hosting the podcast now. I mean, you're doing
you host the podcast.
You host the podcast. You're doing what is now a podcast trope of, you're the guy that hasn't seen the thing that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we'll get in.
I did that. It's,
yeah,
you know,
we've all done it at some point, baby. Mm-hmm. You know, we get off the bus to Hollywood, we get a podcast.
So there are a couple moments in this episode that are especially cartoony. And one of them that I really love is that I don't even remember if they explain why Homer is cutting or trimming the hedges, but he cuts off Marge's entire beehive.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And tries to put it back to no avail, and then realizes that putting a stick inside of it will maintain its, like, structure.
Yeah.
And she just kind of continues enjoying reading her book outside, and there's no dialogue and there's no real joke there, but it's like the Simpsons at that time had so much time to kill, especially in this episode, as we talked about, that you get those little weird moments where you kind of wonder why.
Yeah.
But you laugh just the same.
It's to give inspiration for their episode. Right? Yeah. That's what I thought.
Sure.
I liked that it was more physical comedy.
Yeah, it was an episode, again, back to, like, the other storyline, where, like, it makes sense that they would put a purely dumb joke in there. Another one of those in this episode was the one about where they started talking about animation, saving money on animation.
Yes.
Oh, wait, did you guys bring that up earlier?
I thought that that's where you were going for it.
You may have blacked out.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
that
too,
because your water is actually vodka.
But that was a joke where I was like, why did you make this joke? Even though, like, I liked it.
Oh, I love it.
The joke about saving money on animation was, like, completely a step aside from the storyline they were telling. It didn't contribute to it.
Right. So for anyone who hasn't seen this in a minute, that joke is basically making fun of the Hanna-Barbera type Everyone does it, really. Like, Disney does it, anyone does it, but basically using the same cell background painted, like, again and again and again, and kind of just reminding you that The Simpsons is a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think that definitely is a product of, like, how, like, although fun, how kind of weak the story is in terms of how much they could get into the timing of it.
Right.
I see what you're saying about it not like advancing the story with like a concrete bit of information, you know, that
sure.
kind of advancing. But I felt like we were kind of in the zone of the story where we were getting a lot of color of their,
that's
like,
true.
This is an episode that's a meta commentary on
true,
the
sure.
animation process. And so we're kind
yeah,
of
totally.
Like in Disneyland style, we're in like cartoon meta land. And
mm-hmm.
so that kind of added color to what would lead us to, you know, we're expecting, as viewers of The Simpsons, like, they're going to make fun of their own writers, right? And so it's leading into that room. And
that's true.
I don't know. I loved it because I just think it's fun.
Yeah, I take back what I said because I guess it is making fun of. This episode was a lot of making The Simpsons making fun of itself. And that was another element where it's like, we're cheap and we're doing this.
I loved most about it. I mean, I love it whenever they, like, you know, bring attention to Flintstones or Hanna-Barbera or, like, other cartoons that exist outside of The Simpsons, because it kind of feels like they're knocking on the doors in the same neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of just like, I see you, and that's fun. But I loved that they chose to have, like, what is that woman who's, like, mopping or something?
Yeah, it's just a janitor.
I just love it.
But I think it's so funny because, like, if, like, of any scene to reuse again and again, the idea that it'd be something as mundane as that is very funny to
yeah.
me. I love it.
Speaking of funny things, let's listen to this next clip because it is something that made me laugh out loud while I was watching it at work today.
Look, there's only one reasonable way to settle this. Rock, paper, scissors. Poor, predictable Bart always takes rock.
Good old Rock. Nothing beats that. Rock. Paper.
Dope! You call this writing? If I puked in a fountain pen and mailed it to the monkey house, I'd get better scripts.
But, sir, at Harvard, they taught
us... Oh, at Harvard, they taught you? Hit the straights, egghead. You should have majored in not getting fired.
Sir, Elisa and Bart Simpson sent you a script.
Yeah. Dear Mr. Myers, my brother and I watch your show. You should be proud that children everywhere, blah, 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 bling, 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 blah. Hey, egghead! Sing Fair Harvard.
Fair Harvard, I... You, sir, have the boorish manners of a Yaley.
Here's a witty rejoinder for you.
Oh.
Bart, they rejected our script.
I guess we're just not cut out to be writers.
Maybe he just doesn't take us seriously because we're kids. Let's put a grown-up's name on it.
Well, how about Grandpa? He's pretty out of it. He let those guys use his checkbook for a whole year.
That's dark,
a
too.
A very long clip.
Yeah.
I will admit that I did not realize it wouldn't end
We just listened to the whole episode.
I feel good.
That said, we got to get a lot of exposition. We know exactly what's happening in The Simpsons at this point of the episode.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
I did think that rock, paper, scissors thing was just so funny and so, you know, so something that children actually experience of,
yeah.
like, despite... the odds never being in your favor, really thinking that rock cannot be beaten is very funny.
Yeah, that's a very yeah. kid moment in this episode. But then right around, well, a little bit later when they write the episode and we kind of see it like coming together in real time, you know, a creative process, guys. But, you know, we see it and they end it with a very adult joke. And then a very adult reference, which is Elvis shooting his TV saying, this
right.
show ain't no good.
Yeah.
So, and it, you see it again later. It just
yes.
is such, something that maybe I laughed at it as a child because shooting a TV is funny.
Yeah.
But like I could never have known what they were referencing.
No.
I
so
still
bizarre.
Don't.
Oh. Elvis shot his TV.
Good for him.
Good for him. He had
Good
three.
For him.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Must be nice, Elvis.
I also liked that race. That race around the world joke.
Yes, me too. Me too.
But basically, kind of continue, and we get to check in on what Grandpa's doing. I love that he's writing a very upset letter to the Modern Bride, to the sickos at Modern Bride magazine for not featuring more old people.
Yeah. And she's a lot like the internet today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's nice that we get like just a more grandpa than we normally do. He's not often featured heavily.
It's grandpa's time to shine in this episode.
And I remember as a kid being really freaked out by the ability to take his underwear off without taking off his pants. But I really like that when Lisa asks him about it, like, how did you do that? He's like, I don't know. And he's like legitimately terrified as well.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I feel like in any other show, you'd be like, what a cheat. Like somebody would pitch that. I'd be like, fuck you. Then why do we have this joke?
I did like going back to Lisa pitying Bart. She like, you can tell it's not like she's not like Bart's an idiot. She like feels bad for him that he only thinks Rock is will win. He always like there's like
but still uses it against.
Yeah, that's right.
She's like, kind of evil for trapping him.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Just saying.
But yeah, it is a complex relationship that I think we maybe see in other relationships outside of them, like in our own lives, maybe. Mm. I definitely feel bad for certain people, but then we'll still probably use that thing, you know?
Hey, we lose a lot in this world. Gotta win sometime. Right?
I was about to say that.
Oh!
I really like that they use Abe as the exemplary writer and are shocked that he could be good simply because he's old.
Right. I love that scene. Oh, I was going to say, like, you know, when he comes in and he's all cranky and, you know, Roger Meyer Jr. goes, you're a comedy writer? My God, you're so old. And he just goes, I want my check. That's my best grandpa impression. Is that good?
That
should I send
really
that
good.
To Lorne?
Yeah.
Should I send it to Lorne?
Send it to Lorne.
And he goes, hey, you're a writer, all right. Like a lot of those, even though this is a very low-hanging fruit joke, I like that mixed in with like the more sophisticated ones.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It is weird though, because I do feel like they could have done a lot more with Grandpa being in the writer's room. I think it could have could have had a lot more fun with that.
Perhaps it would have been distracting from the kids' victory for it.
For sure.
Because he's definitely not a story. He's a feature to another story. You know, this obstacle that they have to sort of deal with.
I did laugh very hard when Grandpa shows up in like a very fancy suit.
Yeah.
Because he makes $800 a week.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money even now.
I know.
But especially in 1993.
It's not a lot of money by writer's standards now.
No.
Right.
But for a job, that's really good.
Yeah.
But basically, Grandpa shows up in like this very nice outfit. What would have been, you know, popular when he was young, that type of outfit. And he says, he's like, oh, hello, son. Thought I'd drop by. I make $800 a week telling a cat and mouse what to do.
And then you get another,
Yeah, Homer has this immediate fantasy of sending his dad to the nut house, which is funny. There are actually a lot of thought bubbles in this one because Grandpa also talks about, I guess he falls asleep at one point and has an image of him wearing a dress.
Yeah, I have that. Let me try and find it.
I wonder if the inclusion of all of the different thought bubbles is really just because of what we're talking about in that it really is supposed to be a commentary on cartoons and it's such a cartoony thing to do.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't really do it in a different format as
right.
well.
Yeah.
Because I know that they do it, but they really go heavy with it in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, they always try to justify their animation. I have the line, by the way. I was like, gotta write this down.
Mm-hmm.
So glad for this moment. I dreamt I was the queen of the Old West. I kept a six-shooter in my garter, I did. See? What brilliance. Aren't you glad you waited for that?
Yes.
He also, like, shows up in between two cowboys and says, like, boy, stop. You can both marry me.
I don't want to unpack it because it's, you know, the joy of the joke is that it's so random and, you know, whatever. And it kind of is nice to see Grandpa be anything but ornery. But he has this weird, like, fluid sexuality that you see, I think especially in his like little daydreams, it feels very Bugs Bunny dressing up as a woman kind of coyness. But I did like, especially the way he was animated, it was so cute and how he was like dainty and wearing a dress and is like, I think he just likes attention.
I will say, so I like Itchy and Scratchy because they're a part of The Simpsons and that's kind of just where it is for me. I like most things that are in The Simpsons a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they've always scared me a little bit. Mm. They're violent.
They are. They're
violent
so violent.
To a point where it's actually alarming.
Yes.
And it could be hard to watch. Like, even going to the Simpsons ride at Universal Studios, they have, like, a little tape that plays beforehand of the rules. And, like, the cat will keep, like, jumping out of his, like, his suit.
Yeah. Like,
his skin suit. And then he's just, like, blood and guts. It freaks me out. Like, I think even as a kid, but... I will say, the kids did a very good job writing this episode. They really thought of everything because the twist of having the cat wearing, you know, fine furs, his, wearing his own thing, and then having a meet his murder type people furious by that. Like, there were so many layers that I was very impressed by the kid logic, knowing, of course, it was written by adults. But it was still kind of like, that's good for them. That's actually a very good episode.
I think that, like, one of the Simpsons' strongest qualities is, like, their ability to slip into kid logic in a very real way.
Yeah.
Despite their Harvard degrees. I'll say it.
Do you feel like, because Itchy and Scratchy is often used as a metaphor for the Simpsons, right? Or just meta-commentary. But it's actually like, it isn't. Or they didn't really... I guess it's interesting that they didn't just make it about another family.
Yeah.
I guess that would have been too on the nose or something.
Probably.
Because I guess it's also just commentary on kids' shows being too violent.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe even it's just more on cartoons in general or just TV in general for kids. But it's interesting when those types of things kind of get lost by the wayside. Twin Peaks did that as well. In the first season of Twin Peaks, they have a soap opera that is actually kind of letting you know what's happening in the town of Twin Peaks as well. Mm-hmm. So there will be twins and there will be different, like, a murder, and it's all kind of stuff. But then they kind of abandoned that about halfway through, which is too bad. I understand that gets super tiresome, I'm sure, to write two like TV shows at once. But it's always interesting to kind of see when that comes and when it goes.
I do always appreciate a cheeky little TV show within a TV show.
I do too.
It's
I
fun.
Like it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it's just really, like, god-awful, like, really going for it, god-awful. Mm-hmm. All I can think about is, did you watch The OC when it was on?
No.
No, yes, no?
No. Mm.
It's a treat waiting for you.
I guess what I like, or again, going back to this episode, I'm the host of this show, is that this episode is essentially that, like, TV is stupid, or, like, animation. It's, like, it's taken so seriously.
Children,
that's, like,
part of
it's dumb. And, like, the episode is dumb. There's,
it
like,
is.
Dumb jokes in it.
Yeah.
But that's, like, kind of the point is, like, it's taken so seriously that it's nice, and Itchy and Scratchy's used in that way where it's, like, this doesn't matter. Or it's, like, being broadcast, so it's changing opinion, so it matters to some extent. But, like... it's stupid. None of this is important, basically.
I mean, I think you hit on, like, a really, really great bigger point for, what this whole episode is about, what the show is about of, you know, Simpsons is a show. The people that make it put their heart into it, of course, they care about it, right? And they get awards for it. And then maybe that imposter syndrome that they have and, like, that sort of conflicting opinion of, like, is this really true art? Especially if it's animation, which I feel like animation TV gets, like, you know, kind of a bad stigma compared to, like, prestige TV that's live action. So maybe we have this awards show ceremony within this, and they're, you know, able to kind of air out those sort of grievances of, like, am I really devoting my life to this, and is it really good?
Yeah, we actually have that clip, so let's just listen to that now.
And the winner is Itchy and Scratchy, Abraham Simpson Rice.
Hi, Grandpa! Woo!
That was the first time I ever saw Itchy and Scratchy. And I didn't like it one bit. It was disgusting and violent. I think all you people are despicable. For shame!
He's right. We've been wasting our lives.
The hell with cartoons. I'm gonna do what I've always dreamed of. I'm gonna write that sitcom about the sassy robot.
Here, kids. I guess you deserve this. Let's go.
I guess nobody likes the truth, huh, Grandpa?
Nope.
I'll never watch an award show again, unless that delightful Billy Crystal's involved.
I want to replay that clip for all of America as we embark on Oscar season.
I do remember, like, you know, childhood is kind of hard to pinpoint exactly what happened what year. And, you know, because you're experiencing so many new things for the very first time, it feels to last forever. Like, mm-hmm. that's kind of, there have been studies that people, that time goes by faster because you have less new experiences.
Mm. Right.
But my memory is that Billy Crystal hosted the Oscars for 12 years.
Like, I think he did.
Every year of my childhood, I just remember, like, it, like, the Oscars were only hosted by Billy Crystal in my memory. And it, like, the idea of someone else doing it was very confusing to me.
It was longer than the hunt for the Zodiac killer.
But yeah, I genuinely think I believed that he had always been the host.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Oscars were like a huge deal in my house because it was the one, this is just a side thing, but it's the one day a year that my family let us eat KFC.
Oh, that's nice.
For some reason.
Why?
The Oscars, we would have a checkered tablecloth that we put on the ground and we'd eat KFC.
Our sound engineer, Jesus, is laughing very loudly at this anecdote.
It was
I like that.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I'm vegan now.
Right.
And I miss those days. And if I were to go back, it would be on Oscar night to have a bite of KFC.
I mean, I want that for you too.
I'll tell you what. If Billy Crystal hosts the Oscars again. I think it's so unlikely that Billy Crystal will host the Oscars again that I would maybe say that I would eat some fried chicken.
I mean, it feels like a Simpsons joke for them to, like,
I clearly just want to do it because no one's like,
if anybody hosts the Oscars, you're gonna eat fried chicken.
If anybody stands on that stage,
if anybody does anything, I'll eat some fried chicken.
Talks to camera and makes a joke about you know what they're wearing. I'll take a bite.
I'm eating it as I'm saying it.
Oh, Allie, I was gonna say, being raised in a single mom household, KFC was not a rare treat. It actually was pretty regularly on the sketch.
Uh-huh. Well, here's what's so bizarre about the KFC thing, in addition to the weirdness already. We ate garbage all the time. We had In-N-Out almost every day.
Yeah.
Like, we constantly
but
had
KFC
fast food.
Once a year.
How have you
Oscars?
Not call In-N-Out garbage? You can
You're
leave.
Right. You're right. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
At any rate, I forgot to mention that Brooke Shields is the person who
of
was.
Of course.
It was Brooke Shields with Krusty, and Krusty actually did make me laugh. He's explaining, Brooke Shields from the Blue Lagoon and me, the blue-haired goon, and he just gets extremely upset. How funny.
My hair's green! And then runs off.
The episode ends with kind of a little bit of a takeaway in terms of, like, are we really wanting to do this? Is it the type of lives that we want? But then seeing the further amount of commentary on, like, the guy who's too good for cartoons is going to write a very stupid sitcom about
right.
a sassy robot.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
like, how much better are you than someone else?
Yeah, which at the time, Al Jean and Mike Reese are the showrunners at this time, and we've talked to both of them on this show, and they worked on the versions, like the equivalent of the sassy robot sitcom kind of around this time. So I feel like, they talked to us. I won't name the projects out, but they mentioned a couple things like that. And you got to work. I mean, as a writer, like sometimes you just work on things that, don't necessarily believe in, but, you got to pay rent. But then
it's ALF.
I think that's almost like part of the point of this is like, it's all stupid. Like even when things are quote unquote brilliant, it's like, it's dumb. Or like, this is all pretend.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's like what's interesting about, and you have to, because it's hard to write an episode of TV. Like, it's confusing and like strange, but it's like, so you have to take it really seriously.
Yeah.
But then what you're doing, you're like fighting over a joke about somebody putting a plunger on their head. And it just, it's like, this is crazy what we're doing. And it's this weird dichotomy you have to hold in your head of like, I have to throw myself out at this, but I'm also, it's silly that any of this is happening to begin with.
The stakes are extremely high, and like the, game that you're playing is so silly, and like there's like this huge valley between the stakes and what you're actually doing. Like, your livelihood depends on a horse joke, you know, or whatever. Like, it's so crazy because it does need to have a balance of you taking it seriously enough, but effortless.
Yeah.
It has to feel organic, but then it has to be like easy breezy, but also really sharp, and it has to be all these things. And when you try to become a writer, you have to write alone, which you will never do again once you become a working writer. Or I don't know, like it's like you should never write an episode of TV alone, really, if it's going to be good.
Right.
Anyway.
That point in terms of like nothing really matters, everything is kind of stupid, it's all kind of silly, even when it's brilliant, all that stuff. to get a little deep. It's kind of like life.
Whoa.
It is, though, in that some of the biggest fights I've ever had are about the most trivial, stupid, like, the Teal album from Weezer. Like,
we don't need to relitigate this. I've already said I'm sorry, and I sent you some flowers.
Thank you very much for those.
That No Scrubs cover, we'll talk about it.
But yeah, it is one of those things where it's just like, you know, life imitates art and vice versa. And it's wonderful because, yeah, some of the stupidest things people do and, like, every decision that we ever make is usually kind of like, it's all kind of stupid.
Right.
Well, what's interesting, all that being said about how it's all meaningless, is that people, especially back in this time, and I think still do, like, shape their identities around what they consume. And so, like, you know, like an award show awarding something over something else, like, that means a lot to somebody because they're like, that TV show is who I am.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
And that represents who I am on some level. And so, like, you do have to take it seriously. It's just weird what you, it's just a really weird job, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's playing God in some ways as well. You're creating entire universes if you're in the position that you and Jake are in, where you're actually the, you know, you guys are the reason it exists. It's, right. You know, those things are important and they're really special. It's right. It's all a mixed bag. And this is all to say that this episode ends with the adventures of Ned Flanders. So let's play that clip.
Yeah.
Hens love roosters, geese love ganders, everyone else loves Ned Flanders.
Not me.
Everyone who counts loves Ned Flanders.
Knock that off, you two. It's time for church.
We're not going to church today.
What? You give me one good reason.
It's Saturday.
Oakley-dokley-doo.
Hens love roosters, geese love ganders. Everyone else loves Ned Flanders.
Yeah, it's so perfect. It's just so perfect.
It is. It's very silly, and it really drives home kind of some of the larger thoughts we've had today. So, you know, Matt, we've talked about some lessons throughout, but is there one takeaway from this episode that you could maybe distract, one big lesson maybe?
I think that if you are a TV writer or, like, you're in the entertainment industry, it's too, like, remember that stupid things are valuable. Like, that the stupid stuff is often the best stuff. Like, going back to what that initial Itchy and Scratchy cartoon that they hated, it was like them hitting each other on the head and then, like, giving a dumb message. It's like, that's entertainment at its worst, is, like, didactic bullshit. And it's, right. Like, it's like, hopefully what you're trying to inspire in people is, like, a little moments of joy or like, enjoyment of something. And oftentimes stupid things do that. And so don't overthink it too much.
I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's hard when you are pursuing what feels like a silly nothing. What am I doing with my life? I'm arguing about a hat in a room with other people who are college educated. You know, it's easy, I think, to fall down a path of, like, should I be, like, in Scrubs right now? Like, you know, washing oil off of a pelican.
Yeah,
that surely feels more impactful. And it is impactful, but it's, I think, you don't see when you are creating a show or creating, you know, a piece of writing or a piece of music or whatever, that, like, it does have a purpose to that audience and it is affecting them positively. Yeah. And so, like, your reach is, you know, beyond you even realizing.
It'd be amazing if someone was listening to this while cleaning a pelican.
Their
day is like, oh my God.
What? They're in Australia, like,
finally, a thank you.
My God.
Hello,
here I
Sarah.
Am in Bondi Beach.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say Bondi. Babe in Bondi.
Instant Hotel, bitches.
Instant
it's
Hotel.
A great
watch
show.
It on Netflix.
Anyway, let's plug not other people's shows. Then, so everyone should watch Corporate. It really is excellent. For anyone who hasn't, what's a quick synopsis to let people know what the show is?
We pitched it as Office Space meets American Psycho. So
that's
it's like,
perfect.
Yeah. So it's like that. If you like dark comedy, I think you'll like it. And I think the first season's good. I think the second season's even better. So check it out.
You guys, you know it's good. You think you know it's good. You want to know why you know it's good? Because it is good. You want to know also why? Because you guys get all the crazy good write-ups. You've got the New Yorker up your ass.
I know.
You've got
They're
the AV
right
Club.
Up our
They're
ass.
Right there. But it's very cool to see.
It's been
as
fun,
your
yeah.
friend and fan.
Thank you.
It's very cool to see.
I appreciate
so congrats
that.
To you.
So where can people find you and anything else that you want to plug?
Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Matt Ingebretson.
He is smiling. He's smiling in a very big way.
I'm having a lot of fun on the... No, I barely post, but follow me anyway. And
Go to Good Heroin if you're in town.
If it's not rained out.
It's not rained out. And it
but
usually
you can check
not.
On Twitter.
We'll
call
tell you.
Before you haul mm-hmm. like a good person.
Good Heroin's really fun every Saturday. And yeah, watch Corporate and tell people about it.
Yay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
This has been great. And Julia, where can people find you?
Thanks so much for asking. I'm at Julia Preskin all the things. Allie, where can people find you?
Thank you so much for asking. You could find me at Allie Gertz and all the things, and you could find us at Simpsons Pod.
Yeah, check us on Twitter. That's where we spend most of our time. Everything's Coming Up Simpsons is a production of Maximum Fun. Our show is engineered and edited by Jesus Ambrosio. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
Swish.
Swish. Smell you later.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.